Everything we do is music.
Acoustic space. Boundless, directionless, horizonless.
36.
20.
20.
Welcome to 3620, podcasting from the basement of 3620 Walnut Street by the doctoral students at the Annenberg School for Communication here at the University of Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Deb Loy, and today we bring you a piece by brand new producer Emily Dean Hund that focuses on the We Are culture of Penn State. Just a quick note before we begin, this piece was originally produced as a final project for an Annenberg course called Media Ethnography, taught by Professor John Jackson. It follows a two-part structure. First, it begins with a short audio ethnography, and then is followed by Emily's reflections on the process of research and production. Hope you enjoy.
Late every August, Penn State University's 45,000 students flood the picturesque town of State College, Pennsylvania, dragging boxes and bags of books, computers, clothing, and decor back to their campus dorm rooms and downtown apartments. The town, quiet in the summer months, starts to wake up. Downtown sidewalks buzz with the sounds of friends reuniting. Feet pound the pathways that crisscross campus as students make their way to class, to dining halls, and to club meetings. Chiming bells punctuate this activity day and night. The sound comes from the Tower of Old Main, a historic limestone building that anchors the sprawling campus. Old Main originally housed the Farmers High School, as the university was called when it was chartered in 1855, and today the building is the center of university administration. Most days, the bells play the traditional Westminster quarters and slowly chime the number of each passing hour. On Fridays and Saturdays, they play Hail to the Lion, the university's fight song. It is not uncommon to hear people humming along or quietly mouthing the words. Hail to the Lion, loyal and true. Hail alma mater, with your white and blue. Penn State forever, molder of men and women. Fight for her honor, fight for victory again. On seven Fridays each autumn, the chiming of Hail to the Lion signals the impending home football game at Beaver Stadium. More than 100,000 people come by car, foot, and RV to tailgate and cheer on the team. Sports Illustrated once called this the greatest show in college sports. Ira Glass of NPR has described this campus as a Chevy commercial. September 8th, 2007. On this day, almost everyone in the stadium was wearing white as part of a new initiative to turn the stadium, the second largest in the country, into a so-called White House. From aesthetics alone, it was an almost blinding sight. The benefit, of course, would be intimidation or distraction to the opposing team. But what was truly worthy of marvel was the fact that this fan community was so cohesive, so communicative, and so passionate about their team and the game day ritual that 110,000 of them managed to show up on this day ready to participate in the White House at all. What has happened at Penn State since this day is now widely known. Former assistant coach Jerry Sandusky was arrested in November 2011 on charges of child sex abuse, and that, along with the leaking of the accompanying grand jury report, ignited a maelstrom of events, including the firing of head football coach Joe Paterno. It goes without saying that Paterno was considered an icon, known as much for his coaching as for his philanthropy and personality. He had been at Penn State for 61 years, and his firing on the heels of Sandusky's arrest and the questions that the grand jury report opened up about what Paterno did or did not know and what he did or did not do became a massive media event. The Penn State community responded in multiple ways. The night of Paterno's firing, some students unleashed their anger by rioting in the downtown area. Others went to Paterno's home just north of campus and stood respectfully outside. The following week, an estimated 10,000 people gathered to show support for Sandusky's victims with a candlelight vigil in front of Old Main. A grassroots Twitter campaign, hashtagged #ProudPSUForRain, took off, and within a month raised more than $500,000 for the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. Alumni spoke out on television, in print, and online, expressing a range of complicated emotions. Disgust at Sandusky's crimes and how long they went on unchecked. Grief for the children of the community who had been harmed. Sadness at losing Paterno. Anger at the administration, at the Board of Trustees, and at the media. And shame that such a scandal was rocking a place they once called home. Many media outlets invoked religious language to flesh out the description of Paterno's status and his fall that was being broadcast in real time. He was, quote, a beacon of integrity, the Pope of Happy Valley, end quote. And indeed, it's easy to make those comparisons, not just because of Paterno's stature and his unflinching demand for morality, but because of the nature of big-time football, the traditions, the cheers and songs in place of hymns. Hundreds of thousands of people build a strong sense of community in part by participating in a weekly ritual. Today, the community at large continues to grapple with this scandal and the many questions that still exist about how it happened, as well as the people involved. The football program is different now, too, with a new coach, new jerseys, and strict sanctions from the NCAA. Let's listen to a clip from a game this past November. So that was on November 2nd, 2013. During that game, I had a conversation with one of my neighbors in the stands who talked about the vibes with me. She thought that you can feel everything that's happened in the air. Things are unquestionably different here after Happy Valley, as it's called, was rocked by a very real, very disturbing series of events. But the cohesiveness is still here. The electricity, the shared feeling is still here too. It's important to delve into the history of this cheer. In 1946, Penn State was scheduled to play the University of Miami. In those days, the trend among national collegiate athletics was that when a northern integrated school was to play a southern segregated school, the two schools would hold a meeting to discuss what to do about the northern team's African-American players. Mostly this resulted in those players sitting out the game. Penn State met with Miami before that 1946 game to say that they would play with all of their players or none. The game was canceled. 2 years later, Penn State was invited to play in the Cotton Bowl against Southern Methodist University, and word got out that SMU wanted to hold a meeting with Penn State to ensure that Penn State's African American players would not participate in the game. Offensive guard Steve Suey spoke the now famous phrase, "We are Penn State. There will be no more meetings." From there, the phrase took on a life of its own.
Yeah.
this loud, stadium-shuddering cheer that we hear at games is about much more than football. It is an ode to doing the right thing. People display it on their bodies, wearing t-shirts that say simply, "We are Penn State." This culture of "we are" has become institutionalized by the students in their running of Thon, which is the largest student-run philanthropy in the world. In town, one shout of "we are" and a nearby stranger will almost definitely answer, "Penn State." On the hyperactive online message boards, Penn Staters living all over the world continue to discuss it and to use it as a litmus test when discussing athletes or the administration. They want people's behavior to fall in line with the "we are" values of doing the right thing and doing it well. This culture is everywhere. Sandusky's crimes and the failure of administrators and government agencies to properly follow up on the red flags become ever more horrific when thrown in sharp relief against this culture that enveloped the community. But this culture of "we are" began before Paterno's time, and it did not end with his departure from the school or with his death less than 3 months later. He championed this culture as coach, and indeed he became a symbol of it simply because he did more than any other individual person to expand and draw attention to the culture of "we are." He donated millions to build a library and a spiritual center, to fund scholarships and endow a faculty position in literature. He demanded the best of his athletes, coaching more wins and having a higher player graduation rate than anyone else in the game. By doing this, he earned great respect, and the school and the culture of "we are" got national attention. But this culture is owned by the community, and at their weekly ritual at Beaver Stadium, they worship it, not a person or a team or an institution. As they continue to navigate their way forward through their grief and towards healing their community, they've edited their t-shirts to say, "We still are." The Bell at Old Main was recently restored and reprogrammed, playing Westminster Quarters and Hail to the Lion, as well as the roar of the school's mascot and the alma mater, another hymn that the collective sings with great emotion at their weekly ritual. Let's listen to it. I turned to Penn State for this project for two reasons. First, while issues of pedophilia exist throughout the sports world and society at large, the magnitude of press coverage and public opinion on the Sandusky scandal and its aftermath seemed unprecedented, and it seemed worth taking a closer look at the culture. Second, I am an alumna of the school. And while I don't identify as a football fan, I spent ages 17 to 21 fully immersed in the culture of Penn State. And the culture of Penn State, as I've tried to illustrate here, is in many ways inextricable from the culture of Penn State football. As such, my role as researcher in this project is something I struggled with. How does one approach a culture in which you are more of an insider than the outsiders, but more of an outsider than the true insiders? I found it helpful to focus on what I wanted the end product to be in terms of its descriptive style, accessibility, and focus. Ethnographers always must grapple with the fact that they are immersing themselves in a place, but also must maintain adequate distance to carry out their work. I drew inspiration from the written work of Mitchell Denier and Marcelina Morgan, whose respective ethnographies of sidewalk life in New York and an LA hip-hop community have a significant ability to put a reader right in a place. To provide that kind of experience of Penn State, and to do it in a way that was accessible, was of utmost importance to me. I made a very deliberate decision to use sound to pull this off. When I attended a game this past season, I was caught off guard by a rush of emotions when the pageantry of the game began. The marching blue band taking the field, the familiar music and sounds of the crowd. It made me realize that sound is where the power of the We Are culture lies. Stephen Feld's work helped me here as well, particularly his notion that ethnography should include acoustomology, or what people hear every day, their sonic way of knowing and being in the world. In shouting, we are, individuals express both an individual and a collective identity. Through it, they know themselves and their culture. Using other sounds of the community, the bells, the fight song, was important as well in order to convey what it's like to live in this town and be a part of this culture every day. It was also unavoidable that this project would be partially mediated by my own memory. My history with the school, a nearly decade-long relationship with this place, is what allowed me to ultimately make some of the comparisons I made and to understand and expand that which became the crux of this piece, the encompassing power and symbolic history of We Are. It's just a slice of this rich culture, but it does a lot of work in explaining the community. My goal from the beginning was to use my memory and my ongoing knowingness with the culture only as a tool to allow me to more fully produce an emic understanding of what it means to be a part of Penn State, especially in the aftermath of a scandal that devastated the community and brought down an icon. When editing this piece, a classmate asked, "How emic did it end up being in the end?" I don't know if that's a question I can answer. An emic approach is essentially one rooted in a culture's internal elements and how they function and are understood, rather than being externally interpreted. From my view, we are, the phrase and its meaning, it is the entry point to Penn State culture. It is the heart of this community. I hope I did this justice.
Special thanks to Emily Dean Hund for her work on this podcast. See you next time.
The views expressed on this podcast are those of its producers and do not represent the Annenberg School for Communication, its faculty, staff, or student body. The 3620 podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike International 3.0 license. That means you can remix, repost, or recycle any of the content as long as you aren't making money, you don't change the credits, and you share it under the same license.